Revelation 13, that's where we're going today, and we're talking about the future activity of Satan. And we, in Revelation 12, we saw two great signs, the woman and the dragon, and in Revelation 13, we're looking at two great beasts. And one we looked at last week, the mighty Roman leader, who comes from the great sea, who is, according to Daniel 9, from the Roman Empire, that sixth empire or fourth empire in the book of Daniel, if you count from the book of Daniel. And today we're going to look at the amazing false prophet. And this is not only a revival of the Roman Empire, but this is the revival of the Roman Empire centered in one man. Well, now we're going to come to the second half of Revelation 13, where we have the beast from the earth. And I placed the beast from the earth underneath the beast from the sea because the beast from the earth supports the regime, if you will, of the beast of the sea. Which one's the Antichrist? You have to look at both these parties together. But maybe it's all three as an entity. Who are the three? Satan, who's the dragon, who's behind these two. And these two in combination as a package form what we would call the Antichrist or the kingdom of the Antichrist. So let's go to 3:11 through 17 and look at the beast from the earth. Verse 11 of chapter 13. And I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, or that could be by his authority. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. And he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth, because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he causes all, the great, the small, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one should be able to buy or to sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. We'll stop there for now. This beast from the earth has another name. It's the false prophet. And we get his name from Revelation 16:13 for one, Revelation 19:20 for another. Revelation 16:13, I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits like frogs. So these three together are always working in concert. It's almost like a trinity. And then Revelation 19:20, we find out the fate of these two men. And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet, who performed the signs in his presence or by his authority, by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire, which burns with brimstone. I bring these verses to you only to make the point that these two are named like this, the beast and the false prophet. They're two real people. Well, that's his name. What about his nature? He appears, he appears like a lamb. Now, this is not the first lamb we've seen in the book. There's the real lamb who was slain, but this one's like a lamb, but his character also is he speaks like a dragon. Now, both those things are in verse 11. This gives you an indication of where he's getting his power. From the dragon of chapter 12. 13:12, it says he has the same authority as the first beast. It's derived, however, from the first beast. He's working under the authority of the first beast, but he has the same kind of authority. In verse 13, he's a deceiver. He's a liar. He deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform. Notice how many times those who dwell on the earth comes up. The earth dwellers are those who are committed to the system of the Roman Empire and to the Antichrist. They're committed to him. They will take his mark. He's going to seal his people with his mark in opposition to those who are opposing him. Because remember, the 144,000 which go out into the world, they're marked. This is a counter to that mark. Which side you're going to take. It's going to come down to the middle of the tribulation. You're going to have to decide whose side are you going to be on. This second beast is deceptive. He's able through his sign miracles to deceive those who are committed to not following those who are proclaiming Jesus Christ. He's a liar. And of course he would be, because he's under the activity of Satan. His activity, to focus worship toward the beast. So the false prophet's job is to magnify the first beast. You look at verse 12. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, or under his authority, or by his authority. He makes the earth and those who dwell in it, those are earth dwellers, to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. Now this is interesting. We saw up above that in verse 3, beast which came up out of the sea has seven heads. And one of the heads looks as if it had been slain. It looks as if it had been smitten to death. The Roman Empire looks like it's come to an end, but it really hasn't. What the world is going to see is a reuniting of this Roman Empire, and they're going to marvel at that. And I think that's what verse 3 is talking about, is this seventh head having 10 simultaneous rulers coming back to life. But it's also that the individual who is the head of that kingdom is going to receive a fatal head wound somehow. And that's what we have down in verse 12. He's got a fatal wound. It's been healed. Miraculously healed in some way. The false prophet, or the second beast, makes those who dwell on the earth worship this first beast. Now, it's not going to be hard to worship someone who comes back to life. Jesus, the true Messiah, he came back to life, and it seems like the majority of the world rejects that miracle, that resurrection, but the majority of the world, those who dwell on the earth, are going to marvel at this man. So, verse 13, he goes on to say that he performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. He has the ability to work sign gifts. Now, so what are sign gifts? Sign gifts are those gifts, the kind of gifts that validate your power or your ministry. That's what he's going to do. He's going to validate himself by performing sign gifts. So he's got control over fire. If you remember the two witnesses in Jerusalem, they were able to what? Kill those who opposed them with fire. Again, probably an offsetting sign. Those two witnesses that by the time they arrive now in the middle of the tribulation are now dead and have been taken to heaven. This false prophet can say, those two had fire. They were able to breathe fire. Watch this. I have control over fire too. And that will impress most people in the world with these miraculous signs. This is going to be amazing. So he has an image made. That's in verse 14. He deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast. He tells those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had a wound of the sword and come to life. He has them make an image to the man, or of the man. And this is probably something they leave in the temple. So he has the earth dwellers make the image. And in verse 15, he says, okay, anybody that doesn't worship that image, they're going to be killed. And it was given to him to give breath to the image, so that the image of the beast might speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. The false prophet is causing many who do not worship the beast to be killed. He's the one that's going to go after them. Now, the 144,000, they're already marked. They're not going to worship. They're not going to worship this image. The times of the Gentiles began with Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar found out he was the head of gold. What's the next thing he did? He makes his whole image of gold. And what's he do? He brings the whole kingdom together and says, you've got to bow down to this or you're going to be killed. Well, now you have the same thing. You have the end of the times of the Gentiles ending with an image where the king says, if you don't bow down, you're going to be killed. He does this, again, by performing validating signs. In the Psalms, when it talks about the power of God, God controls fire and wind. The false prophet controls fire and wind. We don't translate the word pneuma here as wind. We translate it as breath. The same word for breath and wind are the same. So he controls fire and wind. How does he do it? He gives breath to the image, causes it to speak. Now, whether he does this with some kind of a technological skill or it's a pseudo-miracle, a false wonder, I don't know. Sometimes we can't explain the how something's taking place in the book of Revelation. You focus on the effect. Here's what happens. We don't know how it happens exactly, but look at the effect. And the effect of him having control of fire and wind, giving breath to this image, that it causes all, the small, the great, the rich, the poor, to be given a mark on their hand, their forehead. He provides that no one should be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. These miracles cause multitudes and multitudes to receive this mark, which now commits them to the worship of the beast. 16 and 17, this is economic control. This isn't just worship. This is bringing worship or religion and state together. If you don't have the mark, you can't buy or sell. It's going to be very, very hard for those believers who are called from every tribe, tongue, and nation by these 144,000 who are from Israel. It's going to be very, very difficult for them. For many, God's going to provide supernatural protection. For some, He's not. Remember what He told the souls under the altar who had already died in the tribulation, and they cry out, "How long, O Lord, are you going to wait to take vengeance on those earth dwellers who killed us?" And He says, "You just wait a while longer because there's many more of your brethren must be killed." So I think this really is the pseudo-Messiah. This really is the one coming forward as a prophet and as a Messiah imitating Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ was the true prophet. When you think about the false prophet, is he from Israel? That's the big question. Is he an apostate Jew? So the whole first half of the tribulation is really marked by apostasy, which allows Israel to be protected. The second half of the tribulation is marked by persecution, because once this peacemaker breaks his covenant, all bets are off. So the question then is he from Israel? Is he an apostate Jew? Look at Jesus, what he says in John 5, where Jesus is talking to the Pharisees in John 5. He says, "I've come in my Father's name, and you do not receive me. If another comes in his own name, you will receive him." You're going to reject me. Somebody's going to come. You're going to accept him openly. They reject their true Messiah, and they're going to accept a false Messiah. This false prophet is that false Messiah that they're going to accept. Now we come to the last verse. The one everybody's curious about, Revelation 13:18, that mysterious number 666. A lot of misunderstanding, a lot of urban legend and myth, but let's look at 18. And I think it's really going to be important for those who are actually in the tribulation in this time, when he says, "Here's wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. It's not the number, it's not a specific number, it's man's number. And some of your translations say that, it is man's number. But I think the next phrase is significant. The number of him is 666. So there it becomes specific. For the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. Now that's three Greek numbers, 600, 60, and 6. It's not three sixes, it's not 666. Who over history has been called the Antichrist? Well, I'll just give you a partial list here. It starts off with Nero. Now, Nero is still the Antichrist to those who view the book of Revelation as completely past. They say Nero was the Antichrist. Along comes the Reformation, many popes. In fact, even down to this day, the Pope is said to be the Antichrist. Adolf Hitler, along with Mussolini as the false prophet, definitely people said, this is it. This is the end times. There was a guy who wrote a book about 1938 proving, without a doubt, Antichrist was Adolf Hitler and Mussolini was a false prophet. He gets his book published, and as it just begins to sell, Mussolini gets killed in Italy. Book sales didn't do well. Well, 1973, the first time I ever heard about the beast was about the computer in Belgium. Maybe some of you remember that. Mikhail Gorbachev, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bill Gates. The World Wide Web has been said that's the Antichrist because it's www, and the Hebrew letter for W is a Vav, which equals 6 in Hebrew numbering. www or Vav, Vav, Vav is 666. Well, it's not 666, it's 666, so you throw that one out. But really, people buy into this. UPC barcodes, that's the Antichrist. That's the mark of the beast, a UPC barcode. Because so many of the barcodes have a 666 in them. Bill Gates the third. Why? Bill Gates, you have to put the third on because when you calculate the letters of his name, it comes out to be 666. Ronald W. Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan, 6 letters in each one of his names. George W. Bush, again, the numbers add up. It depends on how they want to prove it. They want to use Greek numbers or Hebrew numbers, but George W. Bush in Greek comes up to be 666. Barack Obama is seriously considered to be the Antichrist. The point I'm making here is we will never know who the Antichrist is. We're not looking for the Antichrist. We're to study the Bible to find out more about Jesus Christ and what he's doing. If someone comes along and we can prove he's the Antichrist, you know what? What are we doing here?
Yeah, right.
He can't be because we're still here. I just put a partial list down here just to have some fun. And Crack Magazine said it's this guy is the Antichrist. Because the phrase he went by, what me worry, if you calculate that in Greek letters, it's 666. But I don't think it's him either. So as much as I, and I like this guy, so I would not want him to be the Antichrist. No, he doesn't. He looks like me, doesn't he? Yeah. Yeah, or I look like him, I guess. People make fantastic claims about prophecy, which somewhat discredits it. People who set dates really discredit prophecy when they set the date of the rapture. That discredits all of us who believe in the Word of God. Because there's no way to know who the Antichrist is going to be or when Jesus Christ is going to come back. This is the European Parliament in Strasbourg, France. Interesting structure. And this was built like this on purpose. It's modeled after this picture. It's the Tower of Babel. I don't know if, can you read that? The motto of the European Union is Europe, many tongues, one voice. What happened at the Tower of Babel? One voice became many tongues, which brought division. What's the purpose of the European Union? To bring everybody back together. Now here's the next picture inside the tower building. This is the parliament room where the European Council meets. What's happened now is there's empty seat legend that's going around. And you'll if you go on the internet, you'll find various sites that have this as a caption. Empty seat number 666. The vacant seat number 666 in the European Parliament. This comes from an article written by a man named Ian Paisley, who was a Presbyterian pastor in England. He wrote an article in 1999 saying that the seat in Parliament number 666 is empty and is being reserved for the Antichrist. Right, here's a seating chart of the European Union. Now, how many of you can read this? There's the 666 seat right there. Is that seat occupied? Yes, it's occupied. It's been occupied since 2012, according to the seating chart, came out in 2012, by someone named Lichtenberger. So it's occupied.
He's the one.
He must be the one. My point here is that you really got to be careful. And I believe in the rapture. I believe the Lord's going to come and take me away, but I don't know when. And the reason he's going to come and take me away is because I'm ready. Are you ready? If he comes today, are you ready? How do you get ready for the rapture? Put your faith in Jesus Christ as the one who died for your sin. He rose from the dead and he's coming back. I'm pointing that out to say be careful, because there's so much about prophecy that discredits prophecy. And prophecy is about what Jesus is going to do in the future. You know, everybody wants to know, who's the Antichrist? Who is it? I think some of you are coming today thinking I was going to tell you. But I don't know who it is. We will never know. But you know who will know? The saints in the tribulation will absolutely know who he is. So next week, the apostate church. And look at Revelation 17. So I'm going to skip over 14, 15, and 16 and go to 17, because if I do 14, 15, and 16, we lose the connection between 13 and 17. So I want to do 17 first, because 17 goes back to the first half of the tribulation. As if things aren't confusing enough, this book is not sequential. And 17 goes back to the beginning of the tribulation, so we're jumping back and forth. I want to start in 17 next time. Explain that to you, and then we'll go back to 14 and pick that up and go forward. And then when we come to 17, it should fall into place for you.